This episode of Apple at Work is sponsored by Muzzle. Deploying, managing, and protecting Apple devices at work shouldn't be difficult or require several solutions. Muzzle is the only Apple unified platform for business. By combining enhanced device management, endpoint security, internet privacy and security, single sign-on, and enhanced app management into a single Apple-only platform, businesses can now easily and automatically deploy, manage, protect their Apple devices automatically with one solution at an affordable price. With a solution for every business size and the best support in the market, start a free 30-day trial and see firsthand why Muzzle is more than an Apple MDM. Muzzle is everything you need to work with Apple. To learn more, visit business.mozle.com. That's business.mozle.com. Thanks to Mozle for sponsoring Apple at Work this week.
Welcome to Apple at Work, the podcast all about Apple and the enterprise. My name is Bradley Chambers, your host. This week on the show, we have two guests, first-time guests on the show. I want to welcome David Stout, co-founder and CEO, and Tyler Maurer, co-founder and chief product officer at WebAI. Guys, welcome to Apple at Work.
Thanks so much for having us.
So just to start, and David, I'll turn this question over to you. For our listeners that don't know who WebAI is, can you give us like the 40,000 foot discussion about, you know, what problem you're, you know, what you guys do for customers, what problem you're solving, and how you guys came to start this company?
Yeah. So WebAI really serves as the infrastructure for privatizing AI. And what that means is our customers and partners are using our platform to create and adjust AI models that they can own and run completely privately on their own infrastructure that we enable. And what that looks like is our customers can make hyper-specific models for aircraft maintenance, prediction and maintenance. They can make hyper-specific models for robotics and controls, defense, all these different applications for hyper-specific AI. But they're able to create these models, modify them, run them in our infrastructure, and no connectivity required. This works wherever your data is generated. So you don't need to have like some kind of fiber optic cable running to a robot, or you don't need, you know, connectivity to a data center. AI that lives wherever you are and is completely owned by you, and it's private. And turns out that's pretty fundamental. We're seeing trends, you know, in the news with New York Times lawsuit freezing all the data deletion with companies like OpenAI. What does that mean for the user? Well, it means if you're an enterprise that has HIPAA compliant data, your data is frozen, and it could be part of discovery in a court case. That's not good. So for us, our customers do not want that as an option, and we solve the privacy problem while bringing world class solutions to hardware they own.
I remember, you guys, we all look like we're about the same age on the video, but like I remember when like the web 2.0 industry kicked off. It was like Flickr and it was Tumblr, and it was like put all the things online, like everything in the cloud, all the things online. And we just kind of like rushed into that as like, I don't think on the business side, but certainly on the consumer side, like we all just like, that's great, upload everything everywhere. And then all of a sudden you're like, actually, maybe we should have thought about that before we put everything on the internet forever. And so I do think there's a little bit of like, as you know, they say that history rhymes, doesn't repeat itself. Like when it comes to AI, you're seeing people early in this like infrastructure build out of people just like asking that question, like actually
they're internet companies.
Right. Like, do we want this to be somewhere we don't control? There's two angles to that too, of wanting to do this locally. There is the privacy aspect of like, you know, again, like you mentioned healthcare, you know, that you want to be able to own and control that data and control what happens to it. But on the flip side, you reference this, it's also like the bandwidth constraint. So if you're – I mean, I'm just like spitballing. I'm thinking of like an oil rig out in the middle of the ocean. Like if you can run some of those locals, those models locally, and then just even if it has to, you know, you're turning through data locally and just sending bits and pieces of it back, you know, back to the data center, that can really, really streamline, you know, the amount of data that's going back and forth. If you're in any sort of metered internet connection, again, in a lot of our worlds, we just think, oh, we've got fiber everywhere, but that's not always the case. And some of those use cases are the exact things that AI can really help streamline. So I think that's, you know, there's two trends there that are kind of converging that lend itself well to what you all are doing. Tyler, as you all started building this, like what were the challenges of, okay, we've got to make this local?
I mean, you can kind of pick an angle and pry it up. It's very getting the models to be able to run on consumer grade hardware, being able to orchestrate that across devices to scale. The reality is what we're doing is we're working on our platform is a cloud alternative that can scale from one device to many. And what that means is if you want to be able to run a model on an iPhone and you want to be able to distribute that across more devices, you can't run Kubernetes. You have to be able to create libraries that are functional and runtimes that are functional across a wide variety of devices. And so we've spent a lot of time banging our head on the right architecture, the right libraries. And in the end, we ended up creating something that's vertically integrated and proprietary to the company. But being able to do that is very difficult. And so, you know, I think the team's come up with something very special. But if you're going to pursue this again in 2019, there weren't a lot of opportunities and a lot of this was from scratch.
Yeah, I saw a meme that said men will build Kubernetes clusters instead of just going to therapy. And I thought that was funny. You mentioned Kubernetes. And I thought that was, yeah, that's actually probably true. this really plays in well with what the show is all about. It's all about Apple and the enterprise. And we've seen Apple Silicon, this transition when it did it, you know, back in 2020, like it was all about, oh, this is great for the end user. But we didn't know what kind of computing power we might want to have locally. And you all were featured in the M4 MacBook launch. Like, what was that? I mean, from a business perspective, that had to feel like you've arrived, but I think it probably just validated what you're building of like this is getting attention from much bigger companies.
Yeah. I think when you build something, you get desensitized, right? So I try to look back at where we were, you know, 3 years ago on a daily basis and say, is our vector correct? Right? Do we feel like the energy and direction of the company far surpasses where we were, you know, 3 years ago, a year ago? Yes, it's very cool. You know, I think if you would have told us 3 years ago that would have happened, it would have been unbelievable. But when you see, you know, where we are now, what we're building, for us it made sense. We're like, yeah, we're solving a core problem. And we love that people like Apple see that and want to showcase that and want to let their customers know there's alternative solutions in the market. And the collaboration we get to have at that level is amazing. And it's great for, I think, both businesses. And we're solving problems together that aren't being solved really by anyone else. And in that sense, I think there is this growing demand where you're seeing this dissension from cloud, where you were highlighting just a few minutes ago, what are the killer use cases for AI, and what do those actually look like? And turns out a lot of them require high bandwidth and real time reactions. And we're working with a preventative medicine company, and there'll be some announcements on this soon. But even in imaging. Like if you're scanning a region of the body that may have cancer or something like that, the ability to have AI on board and guide the MRI or the CT machine to what to do next, you know, maybe capture another group of images based on the last one we reviewed. But to be able to do that in real time starts to really matter because you start to limit radiation on these patients. You start to increase discoverability of things that maybe otherwise would be completely missed. And you're doing this in a way that really can't be done post process. Like you can't just like send this up to the cloud, you know, terabytes of 3D imaging and get it analyzed and then send it back down. And, you know, at that point, you know, it's over. The scan's over. But you need these real-time moments. In Apple Silicon, what I think people might be missing right now is some of the best performing inference hardware in the world. And inference is where these decisions are made. It's not training. We're making decisions in real time. And the cost per dollar that you're getting in these environments and the energy impact and all of that, it really matters. And it circles back to, you know, the M4 with now there's a MacBook Air that can do real-time AI processing right on your desk and do things that, you know, traditional machines just never could do. And when you look at the competitive landscape, there's not a lot of laptops that size that can do that.
Well, and I think you kind of see the vision of, like, as the phones get more powerful, as the iPad continues to get more powerful, like, you could literally, you might be where, like, the default is doing this locally. And I've wanted that for so long because, you know, and there's two things. There's the latency side of just needing quick answers, and any sort of hiccup makes it feel frustrating. And that certainly is on the mobile side. But, like, what you mentioned is, like, these scans, I mean, I don't care. Like, I'm on I can get up to 10 gig at my house, but I have like a gig up and down. A multi-terabyte upload is still a lot. And so you almost then you are in a bandwidth limited situation because the file size is so big. And so again, it's like you can do that locally. You think about the cloud cost of up and down on that kind of file, you know, exacerbated over like the course of, you know, your entire day, your entire practice. There's a huge cost saving because in some ways that's a sunk cost. Like you buy that MacBook Air and you have the cost of the energy, but the cost of running those models locally is you know, certainly minimal. So I think that's incredible. What do you think? I mean, what did Apple build Apple Silicon with Gen AI in mind, or is it just like actually this works well? Like, what makes Apple Silicon so well or ideal for running local AI models?
I'll let Tyler talk, you know, a little bit about, you know, I think how the hardware plays out in our product, but from a hardware perspective, you know, I would be completely lying if I told you I knew why they built it or what their influence was when they were making that decision. But what I do know is how they designed their chips with unified memory and ARM was a particularly good bet. And it's not just unique to Apple. You look at NVIDIA's new Blackwell, you look at what AMD's doing, they're all moving to this ARM structure. And if you roll back the clock, you'll see that all of this ARM research started with Apple and Acorn RISC machines, which Apple invested in, right? And Acorn RISC machines is where ARM was created. And that's in Apple's DNA. And it continued to be something that Apple focused on and worked on. And I think their instinct of the ARM processor has been correct, that the idea of reducing latency between CPU and GPU and having shared memory turns out just for computational tasks in general is the right decision. Their Apple Neural Engine is an incredible optimization that you can do with AI. There's a lot of work to be done on the software side of that, but the hardware in like the headroom that's there, I still think is pretty significantly unrealized. Tyler, I'll let you kind of expand on that, but I think it's very unrealized still. It's at least how we don't really know how good the hardware is yet, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'll just highlight one thing, and you know that when we started building on Apple, it was when they were still using Intel. And so there wasn't like this huge benefit of running Apple's dedicated inference on their chip. The benefit of Apple is that they're a very vertically integrated company, and they're able to see paths in how hardware and software works together that their competition hasn't, which has allowed them to make very innovative approaches to their infrastructure and how they view the platform over time. And so it's kind of, you know, you hear stories all the time of someone having a custom built computer where they throw a very large GPU on it, very high end Intel chip on it, and they're able to switch to a base Mac Mini and get and outperform the other system. And that's because of how well the hardware and the software is integrated. And so what that means for AI is, when you kind of have two theses. One is that models are going to continue to get bigger, that they're going to continue to get smaller. And, you know, our goal and what we see happening is that these models are continuing to get more dense, and the intelligence you can get out of a local one has been always getting better. And you're starting to hear the very large big data, big compute companies say the same thing. Versus before, it was always you needed a very large cloud environment. Now you've had the CEO of AWS and OpenAI come out and say, yeah, the best solution would be a local model that is faster on device and is able to manage these environments. Like, it's not supposed to be on cloud. And Apple's trajectory with how they've approached the M-series silicon makes that very, very observable and a roadmap item down the road, versus when you look at a lot of their competition, it's very hard to catch up to that architecture. So whether you design something for Apple on a Mac Studio, that same solution has the ability to translate to an iPhone. And that's the cool thing about it, is you're architecting for one silicon, and that allows you to approach so many different target devices that you otherwise wouldn't be able to.
Do you think, like, thinking through, like, what this means for IT teams? I mean, because right now, you know, again, if your favorite, you know, whatever model you're using is cloud-based, it's in some ways a box to check. Like, you kind of, it's like a little bit hands-off. It's like integration, done. Do you think this is going to be another set of just how IT manages data? It's going to be another set of data to manage. You know, it's like another thing to manage, like the devices, the MDM infrastructure, et cetera. Or do you think there's going to be this convergence of like a hybrid model where you do some things locally, something, and then you can pump to the cloud? Like, what do you think, like a couple of years from now, like how does IT interact here?
I think it's 100% distributed, right? Like the reality is you're going to have more data than you're going to want to put it on an iPhone. And there's going to have to be some area that holds that as a competency. And if you look at companies that are trying to adopt AI, the biggest problem with it is they're generalized models that aren't specialized on the company's data. And the final 10% of getting an enterprise into production is being able to take the model and either fine tune it or build complex systems around it that allow it to integrate with their proprietary data. And that's the gap between a general solution and a contextual solution for these enterprises. And their ability to say, hey, here's our data, here's the data that, here's the use cases that it supports, is what's going to be what allows these companies to adopt it. So I think in the end, we'll end up with a much different pattern than what we have right now, where we have a feature set that manages models, data, in deployments and kind of pulls all the loose ends together, because when those come together is when you can actually create these AI solutions. And you'll have some solutions run in cloud, and then you'll have some solutions run on device.
You know, I'm just spitballing here as we wrap up, guys. Thanks for taking the time to chat with us. We'll have a link to learn more about Web AI in the show notes. But, you know, there's just a part of me that says, is there a model for a new Xserve in 2025, 2026? There was a reason the Xserve like wasn't popular and wasn't selling, and it wasn't competitive. But just weird how things happen. And it's like now it's actually the Xserve might be an interesting product to have, and it might give Apple some room to experiment. And I think it would unlock a lot of additional revenue opportunities in the enterprise. I know you all are partners at Apple, so you can't really speculate. But like, I don't know. Again, we think through this like. Is everything happens in trends. It's like, okay, everything was local and it was all cloud. And it's like, we may move back to where everybody's a little bit hybrid, and having a really powerful Apple Xserve in your own data center, in your own environment, might be pretty interesting.
I think the good news is, you know, whether or not Xserve or something equivalent happens, the hardware that is available with software like Web AI, that dream is, you know, well and alive today. If you were in our offices in Austin, Texas, you'd see a beautiful server rack with Apple Silicon and, you know, Ultras to the new M4 minis and, you know, all of those things or new minis rather. But with the right software, you can create that product with the hardware they have available today. And I do think there is this renaissance moment happening where, you know, just calling back to earlier in the conversation, we referenced internet companies. And I think it's worth a double click in the sense of, this is what I'm talking about at London Tech Week this coming week, is we're measuring the wrong metric. In regards to the internet, we're building internet companies with a great technology that's called AI. And that might be the wrong business model for this technology. And what I think is interesting is this Xserve type moment, right, where enterprises now all of a sudden really care about owning their own hardware, owning their own data, owning their own AI. There is a tremendous opportunity there. And we're seeing a lot of great businesses, you know, both, you know, large public companies to large private saying we need to own our infrastructure. And we're investing dollars in that. And both financial institutions from medical companies to manufacturers, car companies, et cetera. Everybody's saying we need to bring that data and that compute back home. And if that's true, I think, you know, Apple hardware will be a piece of that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. There's going to be like a lot of different variations here. I don't think it's going to be like one size fits all. It's like there's companies want the flexibility there. So guys, thanks for taking the time to chat. Well, again, we'll have a link in the show notes to learn more. It'll be interesting to see just how this unfolds over the coming years. We're recording before WWDC and it'll air after WWDC. So I'm not going to speculate there, but I don't even, to me, I look at this as like very much a, you know, 24-month, 36-month, even a 5-year thing. There's a lot we don't know what's going to happen, what Apple has in the pipe from a hardware point of view, and then just where the trends go with customers. I think right now I feel like that there is this shift, certainly not necessarily moving away from cloud, but like not necessarily being cloud first and asking the question, does it make sense to do something locally? Can we? Is it better for privacy? Is it better for cost? So we'll see. But again, thanks for everybody for listening to this week, and we'll talk to you next time.